we should kick start with our meeting. Good morning and welcome to members SAPO, the board member of SAPO and the team CEO and the company secretary, officials from the department, I assume the rest, members of the media. And am I missing someone else? Okay. We have a few apologies. The minister, as well as the chairperson for SAPO, we are expecting. Well, we've got the chair of the audit committee, Mr. Zakwe, to introduce Mr. Barnes, the COO just walked in, Madam Kwele, the secretary, Mr. Dada. Where are the officials from the department that are written here? Is that you? Omtembu no Nolang? Olanga is coming. Okay, fine. Colleagues, the purpose of our meeting today is really to deal basically with three matters that are coming from SAPO. We have requested them to update us in the main on the grants issue, which is the SASA work as to where we are. There are issues of the backlog that we have identified, and the other matters that may be of interest to members, the issues of funding and any other matter that may come from the from the floor. I'm going to allow the audit chair of the audit committee. I assume it also includes risks, or it doesn't. It does. Who's leading the delegation to take the floor? I've already introduced your delegation, sir, so you can kick start with the meeting. I guess you know members seated on my right-hand side. But I must also tender the apology of Madam Sotetsi. She is not well. I said to her, rather not come, because if you're not well, we don't want to carry coffins out of Parliament. I just said she must just stay away and take care of her health, because last week, she wasn't well. She forced herself. She's been forcing herself to come to work. I've just said to her, health come first. And please take it easy, and we're hoping that she'll recover soonest. We will convey our support to her, and Hajira, if you have extra cash, please buy a card or a flower. If you don't have sufficient cash, Mr. McKenzie, that's the backup. And Myanmar. No codes for that. It will come out of his pocket. I mean, Asinaman. Ahaniyeman, Mr. McKenzie. Okay, anyway, but let's try and do something about it. Thank you. Sir, you're on the floor.
Okay, thank you very much.
Remember, we only have 1 hour, 55 minutes to do the work, both your presentation and our questions and responses. So let's try and... You don't have to go through everything. Members have gone through your script. Walk through the things that you believe are crucial for us to consume, and then allow your delegation to support you and walk us through anything else. And indeed, if there are things that we have not requested for, which you believe are crucial, to be brought to our attention, as you know that your entity is a very important player in our landscape, and indeed it's an entity that whose footprint is almost across the country, and from whom our people derive used to derive a lot of services, still are expecting to derive a lot of services. I know that as a school kid, the only entity that I knew could do everything every week would wait for the day when at school they read the post. You know, they used to read it from the assembly, and you get very excited when you see the post. Now, like these days they've introduced IT, now you have to use SMS and WhatsApp, which has actually defeated the whole duty of post office. But indeed, the role of post office remains very, very cardinal in our landscape in terms of service delivery. You're on the floor, sir.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Greetings, honorable members and the members of the media. I think it's quite an opportune time to come and update the committee on the progress that we have made from the SASA side in terms of grants payments, and also just share the status on how we have gone in terms of the CardSwap program, CashSwap program, and some of the risks that you are dealing with and how we've managed them. Also, what we're going to be talking about today is the mail backlog. I think the team will be touching on how they have managed to deal with domestic mail and also international mail, both outbound and inbound. And also, one of the other factors that I think we also need to talk about is how we've currently utilized the recently money that was granted to the post office. In terms of the SASA grants, just before I let the team, I just need to highlight the fact that, you know, in terms of migration from the original target that we had of 8.5 million from April 8, 2018, 7.5 million has been migrated to SABO, and the other 1 million are within the banks. Even though there are challenges in terms of cards not collected, but I don't think that's a big enough issue. I think through campaign we should be able to deal with that. There's obviously a big spread in terms of where the monies are being withdrawn between the banks, ourselves, and different merchants. But we're very happy to report at a very high level that the migration is a success thus far. I'm sure the honourable members would have picked up that there were some robberies in some of our post office branches because of cash in transit as a risk in its own, and the idea obviously is to move away from cash and migrate everybody to the card system. So there are efforts that are being put in place to make sure that beneficiary experience is enhanced and that we use the broader footprint to further our departmental mandate. In terms of the mail backlog, I think a lot was also publicized around big bags not being cleared for domestic and international mail, even though we're still falling short of standards in terms of clearing of mail within the same town or between provinces. But I think we've made significant strides because 87% within the same town has been cleared within 2 days, 65% in 4 days between provinces, and national mail within 8 days. In terms of international mail, outbound mail has got to leave within 3 days, currently leaving within 8 days. But inbound, we're still having some challenges, but efforts that have been put in place, for instance, was to make sure that there's increased number of workstations. We upgraded our network, redirecting of the eastern side of emails for KZN in Eastern Cape to Durmail, Western Cape and Northern Cape to Cape Town, and obviously electronic notification so that people can come and collect as swiftly as possible. So, Chairperson, in terms of those 2 points, I will then allow the team to give us further detail on those particular 2 matters. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. The primary responsibility for SASA project and also for the operations, which includes the backlog, is COO Lindiwe Kwele, and I will back her up in those presentations, and then I will address the funding issues. Thanks. Over to COO.
Thank you, CEO. Good morning, honorable members. Thanks, Chair, for the opportunity. As Chair has indicated, we need to be succinct, and I think the Chair has covered some of the issues. But for the purpose of this meeting, I just wanted to zoom in into our strides that we've made as a team in relation to our successful delivery of the critical milestone in terms of the FAFSA grant migration and payments despite short timelines that we have. And I just want to confirm to the committee that 70.8% of beneficiaries have been paid through SAPO during February 2019 payment cycle, Chair. And we've created short-term jobs, 3,797 temporary jobs has been created through this process. So the issues of local economic development are enhanced through the process of through the work that we're doing on the on the ground. And these temporary jobs are basically people who are helping us with the card swaps as well as for payments in the cash pay points. Cash payments via cash in transit, as the Chair has indicated, it remains one of the high-risk issues, very expensive, very it's unsafe. So it's very important that we really start exploring alternative methods of payment, but also educating our beneficiaries and showing them why certain options are less are more unsafe but also value for money on their behalf. And then we'll also to continue as a team to improve beneficiary experience for the grant payment. And Chairperson, if you had the privilege of going to some of the pay points as well as smaller post offices, we've also created awareness campaigns, and there'll be people entertaining and edutainment kind of thing to ensure that beneficiaries are actually educated in making meaningful decisions when making options for their choices for the options of payment, because we believe it is important to continuously educate our beneficiaries. And then, Chair, zooming into the backlog, as you know that last year we were sitting at about 42 million backlog. I just wanted to confirm that in terms of the domestic mail, that was cleared in December 2018, with international mail backlog for registered items, which is now just below 500,000, and we are actually on point in terms of the timelines that we've set ourselves to clear that. Chairperson, remember that we had a strike last year, and we also had a scenario where most of the creditors were removing their forklift and their vehicles, and then when we got the money, we were able to also increase our vehicles. At the moment, I can confirm that 90% of our vehicles have been procured, Chairperson, and distributed across all our regions, including the forklift tender finalized and now the dispatch. So we will be able to start seeing improvement in terms of the turnaround. And then obviously we were also given the 2.9 billion funding allocation, which has really enabled us to pay the loan that I was referring to, and then also reduce the creditors' payment backlog, because we also had a challenge where most of the creditors, especially the landlords, were actually shutting down some of the post office because of non-payment. So, and then we've also put together a capital investment framework where we are really looking at investment cases to modernize and improve efficiencies in terms of our in terms of operations. So the baseline is of, just to remind members, the baseline is of the 2018 April. It indicated that there were about 8.5 million beneficiaries that were paid through the old SASA card that needed to be swapped. And in terms of the Concord, remember, we needed to have cleared that by September. And we're happy to indicate that that was done. And then as of December 2018, we were able to have migrated 7.5 to the new SASA SAPO card. And then over the million went to the commercial banks, Chairperson. And then as of the end of November 2018, we had about 400,000 that needed to be swapped by December 2018. So where we are sitting, Chairperson, we need to really intensify our communication and awareness just to get the 150,000 beneficiaries who have not presented themselves to collect their new card. And obviously working very closely with the SASA team just to ascertain their whereabouts, You may find that others may be deceased because we do have the data warehousing, but others, maybe they are just taking their time. But I think we will continue working on the ground to make sure that those that still have to be migrated do come through. Or maybe they may have actually approached the commercial banks and prefer to actually use their private accounts. Or they may have opted for the CPF because as much as they are now called, they've got a new name now, Chair, but we still do get other people who are actually migrated to the green card. So maybe they may have opted for that because even in other pay points or in front of the post office, you still do get some of the beneficiaries being lured to go and migrate to the CPF. So maybe that could be the reason. I just thought that I don't need to go through the journey because this is quite familiar with our members in terms of where we started and where we are at. But for the purpose of this meeting, I just thought that we needed to zoom in into our February 2019 payment extraction file. We received the payment file of about 11-odd million beneficiaries, which needed to be paid across the country, chairperson. And we've given a segmentation matrix in terms of how many were paid compared to January 2019 as well as now, and I'm happy to indicate that as SAPO we were able to disperse 9.4 billion for the month of February, chairperson. And even now for the March payment cycle, we've already started, and as of the day before yesterday, we had already paid more than 5 billion. As you know, that we pay up until the 15th and or 18th thereof. So the payment for March had already commenced, chairperson. So we've also given a segmentation in terms of, as you know, this is a hybrid. We wanted to also indicate to the members so that they can see in terms of how many beneficiaries are paid via ATMs or merchants in terms of the point of sale through the merchants and the SAPO branches. As you can see, the over-the-counter has been fluctuating. It started at 353,000 beneficiaries. In January, we paid just 429,000 beneficiaries, chairperson. And I think the month of February, we also started seeing an increase in our branches, the reasons being the first 4 days we had a problem with the ATM. Most beneficiaries could not be paid through the ATM channels because of the link, the connectivity between the banks and some of the banks. But that was sorted out after maybe 5 days. So we started seeing the spike in terms of beneficiaries flocking into post offices. And I think maybe honorable members might have received some complaints where some post offices were running out of money. Because again, in terms of cash management, we have to put certain controls. Because if a branch has paid 500,000 in month A, so we can't just ask them to be ordering 6 million. Because you have to just put a buffer and make sure that we are dealing with as much less cash as possible because we don't want to expose our employees. But where there are other challenges in other channels, we start seeing people flocking there. Then we have to make some contingencies, which we always do with our payment partners, like our Standard Bank chairperson. The challenge that we still face is the resource constraint, chairperson. Because we needed to also get additional resources to support the SASA in a short period of time with the limited resources. But that is also being done. And I'm happy to also indicate that that process is now done in conjunction with our distribution network policy that we've put in place. And we're able to absorb as many people because, you know, most of the SAPO branches were meant by one or two people. But based on the demand, because we've now put together a demand management approach where based on the demographic profile of the number of beneficiaries that are being served, we are able to make sure that there's a fit for purpose. But that is also ongoing, chairperson. So we're not 100%, but we are now executing that based on our distribution network policy that was approved by the board. We also had challenges with our partner in terms of the network upgrade because we needed to have completed that by March. But the number, we've extended that to August. But we are happy with the practical program schedule that has been presented before us. and I want to confirm that by August, all our branches will be fully connected, Chairperson. And then in terms of our, as you know, that initially this was a BOT, but now we also are now the implementing agent on behalf of SASA. So that gives us an opportunity to start really leveraging of the state infrastructure to also start exploring other potential businesses for support a person. We also had to get most of the new equipment. As you know, that the post office has not invested in the infrastructure for the past 10 to 15 years. So this also helped us to really modernize our operations. We had to buy new laptops. We had to buy note counters because we didn't have that in most branches. Cash protection devices because, yes, we do have all safes, but they are not as modern. But now to actually ensure that we put mitigation plans in place, we have to make sure that we have cash protection device so that if people are being robbed and once you open it, actually stain the entire money, because in doing so, you can actually be able to effectively engage with our insurance companies. And then the automated cash dispensing devices. At the beginning, we also start seeing our employees because they will be so fatigued because you're dealing with a lot of beneficiaries. So manually counting is a bit of a, it's a risky issue, but it's also not conducive for employees who need to focus. So we also had to look at the automated cash dispensing devices. We are currently also dealing with access control. Some branches, they do have CCTVs, others didn't have, but we needed to make sure that access control, there's investment in our security, in the technology across all our branch network, Chairperson. That work is underway. We, as the Chair has indicated, we've had some few incidences of robberies, predominantly in the Eastern Cape area. It's been one of our bugbears, but we're working very closely with the crime intelligence. But in the bigger scheme of things, considering the money that we deal with on a monthly basis, I would say that the theft will be about 0.5 to 1% of the total amount that we handle per month. But, I mean, for us, one rand lost is one rand too many. So we need to ensure that we put all the controls in place. A case in point, I think you probably might have heard this on, in the media. In Gauteng, we had robbers who actually they pretended to be beneficiaries. They were helped through on a wheelchair, only to find that that person stood up and started shooting in Gauteng. So the staff, we have to deal with issues of wellness because our staff are also traumatized. But SEPS crime intelligence has been amazing, Chair, so we give credit to them. But we can also deal with this type of unscrupulous tendencies, because from a dignity perspective, we have to respect the elders and everything, so you can't ask people in a wheelchair to stand up just to check whether they are really disabled and everything. So it's a bit of a challenge. So we need to make sure that guarding service and the police visibility within the precinct is actually intensified just to deal with those issues. Chairperson, as I've indicated, and the CEO also elaborated on this matter, as SAPO with our CIOs, IT, FEG, we really have to start looking at alternative source of payments. Cashless solution, I think, is the way to do this, because really, if you look at each and every pay point, we're spending about 38,000 pay point, you know, in terms of our fixed cost. And in other instances, you do find that there is zero beneficiaries, but you've already incurred costs for security and the like. And we're speaking with our counterpart at SASA to really say we need to find a cost-effective way of dealing with this. And I humbly request that our honorable members, as we deal with the political and the campaigning, because most people maybe they will use that process to really want to be to really want even non-profitable pay points to still remain open. It's not helping us. So we really want to ensure that those pay points are closed because they are not serving any purpose. But we've also agreed with FASA that though even if there are beneficiaries, but if they are less than what we anticipate, at least let's cover our basic cost. And I think that principle, we've actually found each other in that regard. So I'm hoping that this can be rendered in a sustainable way, Chair. So our focus as the team is to actually ensure that we really continue improving, because the foundation has been laid. We've debriefed. We've now, because this was a project, but we've now incorporated this into full operations. And I'm happy to indicate, Chair, that finally now we have all regional GMs, because also not having leadership in regions was also another inhibiting factor. At least in terms of accountability, responsibility, and authority, I now have a team that I interface with at regional level. So all regions now have fully appointed GM as of November last year, Chairperson. And I think for us, Chair, it really is about optimizing on the IGPS, because we've invested so much money in that product. Now it really is about how do we use that from a product diversification point of view, because it can do so much more than just dispersing of a grant payment. So we've already started engaging with other partners within the government setup just to actually say, as SAPO, these are our capabilities, this is what we can offer at a minimum cost, because the state has already invested in this infrastructure. So our focus is to ensure that we reduce, if not completely eliminate, the cash payment via the cash in transit services in the rural areas, Chair. And I need to indicate that the fact that in areas where we were initially told that people don't have alternatives, they've really found alternatives, because our job is to make sure that everyone have access to their money in their card. But when we go in other areas, we do find that people have found the alternative. So I really think that issue must be dealt with. So in terms of the SASA project, that's where we are at, Chairperson. We are tightening up all our controls at the moment with the team. We are preparing for our audit state of readiness, because this was a huge project, and AG, obviously, in terms of the audit plan, we'll be looking into this, and we're quite comfortable that we've put in all our ducks in a row. We've crossed all the T's and dotted the I's in terms of ensuring that any audit process in that regard can be dealt with. We've also submitted, because the auditors, even from the SASA side, have requested information, we've also submitted that audit file, Chairperson. So that is the SASA project. Now, if I can be allowed to move to the mail backlog, I'll be guided by the Chairperson. Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, last year we had a strike, as I've indicated. Our delivery standard, I think we were at about 86.5% in terms of our APP, our final performance, actual performance against the target. We did not meet that. And then in May, between May and July, we also had, starting in May, we had a shortage, a work stoppage at Tshwane Mail as well as Wetspoort. Because it was during winter where employees were complaining about the conditions, that they were not conducive, it was too cold because there was no heater, and they then embarked on a work stoppage. But subsequent to that, we also had a strike, which really did not last that long, but it has serious implications in terms of the backlog and the carryovers, and then also our delivery standard. We dipped from 86.5% to 42% in September. Then we had to put in, after the strike, after we agreed with the organized labor and signed the agreement, we then committed to actually launch a operations Kuka Maudo, where we were really trying to push in dealing with the backlog. Obviously, we had to make sure that the public is kept updated in terms of how we were doing. We had to also prioritize domestic backlog clearing as well as the international backlog clearing. We were able to do, I know that in the media we had made certain promises, but we were able to finally deal with the backlog clearance on the domestic front in December, Chairperson. And I wanted to just just break it down in terms of where we are currently. If you look at our the across the same town delivery, at the moment we are at 87%, Chairperson, but between provinces we are still not as good. We are at 65%, which takes us about 4 days in terms of the between provinces delivery. And then all national mail is delivered within 8 working days, exception being the rural part of Northern Cape. We still are challenged in that regard. Chairperson, on the international male status, I need to indicate that we've now streamlined our processes and we've also separated Office of Exchange, which now forms part of value-added service, because everything was intertwined in the past, because UPU has given us certain methodologies and norms and standards that we need to adhere to. So we now have an Office of Exchange in which Joburg International Maize Center, JIMC, Durban International, as well as Cape International form part of the Office of Exchange. So which then forms part of the value-added service, including other digital products that you are dealing with. So in terms of our international mail status, there's outbound, which is the export, Chairperson. The mail is supposed to leave the country within 3 days. Because of the issues that I raised last year, it deteriorated to about 20 days. That's why people were up in arms. But as of January, we've now dropped just below a 500K mark. The team is continuously pushing. And we've also ensured that instead of AmaSource countries dispatching everything and clocking the system at JIMC, they now send direct to Cape Town, Cape International, as well as Devon International. And then in terms of the inbound, the import, mail is supposed to be delivered 2 days after the arrival in the country. In July, it took 30 days. We had about 2 million backlog. In January, it improved to 13 days. We're sitting at about half a million. Now we are just below that, and I'm monitoring that every week at NCC. I chair the NCC Operations National Control Center, where I get to understand where we are in terms of our carryovers, as well as the backlogs. And I also mirror that with the request, UPU on the international mail, they mirror our screens, and they are able to, as a means of verification, to then match and see whether this reporting is what is reflected on the UPU, because they have access to all the international mail operators, Chair. So as a means of verification in terms of the authenticity and the credibility of the information that we put forth. On the EMS, Chair, I'm happy to indicate that we don't have any backlog in that regard. The backlog currently in the registered letters. And the reasons being, this requires custom clearance. And we can't dictate to SARS in terms of how they have to deal with that. Obviously, we need to have a clear SLA around the norms and standards so that they also understand in terms of the regulatory standards. You know, because they can't sit with it for a long time. Because what happened is that in the past, I think there were control weaknesses around which registered mail came, looking at the size of the registered letter, which one will have to go through and which one needed to go through the customs clearance. But now we are very clear on the standard operating procedure, and on the all registered letters have to go through the custom clearance process. And sometimes we do face certain delays which really frustrate the customers. One of the other issues, Chairperson, which was impacting on our processing was the issues of network connectivity, especially at JIMC. Because it's next to the national key point and the access into the area in terms of dealing with the fiber optic rollout and everything. But I'm happy to report that the upgrading of the network to fiber has been done, Chair, and this on its own have actually enabled us to increase our processing time, because that was also another frustrating issue in terms of the connectivity. We've doubled the number of workstations for custom assessment at JIMC, Chairperson. We've also, as I've indicated, our key source partners, we've instructed them to send direct Devon International for KZN, as well as Devon Office of Exchange for in KZN, and then Western Cape, Cape Town International, Chair. Our last mile has been integrated of EMS to National Courier Link. And then after clearing the domestic mail, the national mail centers are also helping us to sort out the international parcels. We've also introduced an SMS notification process, because in the past, and again, we're going to be rolling out a huge campaign educating our customers to also ensure that every time when they are ordering or sending stuff, they must always put their mobile numbers, because it enables us to deal with issues of SMS notifications. The scanners, it's one of the big bugbear. Right now we're sitting with less than 20 scanners across the entire country, and we actually need 1,600, and that has been prioritized. It also costs, yes, as much as we have warm bodies, but they must share two scanners in a shop floor. And that on its own, it undermines the productivity process, Chair, because you can't say people are sitting doing nothing when there's only two scanners that are working. So we've also embarked on a procurement process to actually deal with that. And this will also help us to increase the visibility of parcels in the postal system, because it's also a standard operating procedure in terms of the UPU standards. So, Chair, I'm also excited to indicate that UPU, they send the team to really come and assess our interventions, because at the GIMC there was an issue around our conveyor belt. Because that issue was, we were funded through the QSF fund with the UPU, but it was open-ended, so we needed to go back and do a closeout report indicating why it will no longer serve the purpose, because the production engineers, they needed to redo the layout of the floor, but we still need some investment in ensuring that our processes are automated. So that investment forms part of our new capital investment framework that we've put in place. Including adding more computers for processing and sorting and the scanners, and I think we'll start seeing some improvement. So where I'm sitting, Chair, I just see the light at the end of the tunnel. It's been very difficult, but we are seeing more and more investment, which are going to also help us to really start improving our delivery standards. And I appreciate that Rome wasn't built in a day, and we need to understand where we come from as the post office, because really the team had nothing to work from. There was absolutely no machineries, no, in terms of the norms and standard. You know, it's like asking someone to deliver something whilst their hands are tied at the back. It also deals with issues of morale. It also deals with issues of OSHA, because even lighting in other mail centers was not up to scratch, so we had to deal with issues of economics that we're dealing with. So, Chair, we will be reporting on a quarterly basis, but I want to assure the committee that we are beginning to see some improvement, and we'll continue appreciating the support that we receive. Thank you, Chair. I'll allow the CEO to then talk about the recapitalization fund. Thanks.
Thank you, CEO. Thank you, Chair. Just, it's a one-page summary. It's quite an exciting event to watch your bank statement and then see $2.947 billion come through on one line. It's a big number. We can see very clearly what it was utilized for. We had a bridging facility of 635 million rand pending the arrival of this capital, and we had an overdraft facility of 400 million. Those were repaid in full with interest, and so we have no bank facilities at the moment that we're utilizing in the group. We then had intergroup transfer, which had to be reversed, which was between the division of the Post Bank, and that was then settled. The final allocation of capital as between the bank and the other operations is the subject of an exercise which is being completed now as we transfer the assets and liabilities of the bank into the bank license application body. A lot of the money went on paying critical suppliers and property rentals, although I want to pause on property rentals for a second. What we did for the first time really properly in the organization, because we have applied for and received dispensation for the USO, or the, if you want to call them, the public service mandate post offices, we had to do a really scientific study on which of our post offices were profitable and which of them weren't profitable. Not just for the U.S., not only for the subsidy, but also for our own business rationalization. And we've discovered quite a few post offices that are not profitable and also not USO post offices. And so the payment of amounts are due, which is obviously due and payable, is also part of an exercise of rationalizing the branch network with the use of technology and other things to get rid of loss-making branches, which are just, I mean, one of our biggest loss-making branches is Cape Town. believe it or not, it's in the middle of a big metropolitan centre, and it's, it loses the most money out of all of our branches. There are others like Uppington and so on. So we've started putting some science in that, but it is one of our most visible complaints when you lock a post office. And we've had, I went personally to Stellenbosch 2 weeks ago after the budget speech, and there I had to engage with the Handels, the Chamber of Commerce, who've declared us a bad lessee, and so we're addressing all of those kinds of things. But where there are still some branches where we haven't paid, those need to be brought to my attention. We settle them straight away. The rest of the table, I think, is self-explanatory, and that leaves us with about 1.3 billion of the 2.9 billion, bearing in mind no bank borrowings. And that essentially is, of that 1.3 billion, 853 million is for capital expenditure projects, which have been properly prioritized and costed and evaluated. And about 100 million of that is for quick fix, quick wins, things like OSHA compliance, things like just the look and feel of a post office or a branch, or even some of the working conditions like buying shoes and gloves and basic work necessities. So that's how we will, at this stage, be using the money. Thank you, Chair. I think I want to make a couple more remarks over and above what the COO has said, and then perhaps we can open it up for questions if that suits you, Chair. I think, as far as SASA is concerned, the ultimate end game must be a fully integrated technology solution, whereas we currently operate in parallel with the Department of Social Development and SOCPEN and BASA, and there are lots of systems and interfaces that have to talk to one another, and those introduce gaps which can be exploited by unwanted elements. Once you've got a fully integrated system, that will be eliminated primarily. There are many, many cash solutions to cash, e-wallets and other technology forms of payment. It's as much been an education as it's been a technology matrix to sort through. Ultimately, we see a world where we have a huge technology central capability in government, capable of dealing at the smallest unit of interface, which is between an individual and a spaza shop at their place of residence, practically. And that's where we see it going, which will eliminate CIT, which will eliminate you. I mean, our CIT costs are close to a billion. And if you just take that out of the equation, you start talking about fundamental economic change in the economic profile. As far as the robberies, and I would describe these, I know it might not go down well, but these are sort of still petty, amateurish, non-systemic faults in the system where people physically come in and steal money with a gun, or are able to steal some cards, and we have both internally and in a deep involvement with SAPS, we have our teams of investigators out there monitoring crime. I think we're feeling very comfortable that some of the integration issues will be dealt with. I also need to, again, just point out what we mean when we say the backlog is being cleared. It means that we've cleared to the Universal Postal Union standards. It doesn't mean 100%. It means that we are delivering within a world standard, which is 92% of mail being delivered within the required dictates of the UPU, which might be 5 days for this or 2 days for that or whatever. So given that we deal with, you know, in excess of 2.5 million items of post a day, you are going to have some complaints always. I also need to say that in the last 6 weeks, and we're not here to discuss it, but there's been an extraordinary energy and development into e-commerce and logistics for the post office. We have now, you know, only begun to get ourselves fully ready for that because it's been driven by the international UPU. E-commerce has become a problem internationally for all post offices, because the extent of volumes moving away from people going to malls and buying things to people ordering over the internet has swamped all post offices around the world. And that has become increasingly necessary for us to integrate, and we are therefore part of a quite big movement, both in SAPOA, which is the Southern African entity, in Africa as a whole, and in the UPU as a whole, with things like not having different track and trace systems and so on. So We've completely upped our game with the UPU. We used to send lesser level representatives. We now send the COO to Switzerland to go and understand what's going on, and that has proved to be a dramatic change in our understanding of the world game. And so I think those are the items, Chair, that we were asked to respond to today. Thank you.
Thank you, Sapo. Our Sapo rep in the committee, Mr. McKenzie, you're going to take the first bite. Any other takers? Madam Killian, Madam Dongeni, and Madam Shin.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just generally, Mr. Barnes, if I can say to you and your team, I'll give you a slight congratulations. You know, you've really taken this organization from seeing something really broken to something that's actually showing a great deal of promise and that seems to be working effectively. Again, just working off external perceptions, I think your work in the transition to social grants was a massive exercise, and you've done exceptionally well out of that, in my view. Very few people are not getting paid, if any, because you would hear about the exceptions very loudly in the media, and it's quiet, which means you guys have done your job. So I'd just like to give you a big up for that. I noticed that there's still a number of customers, I think it's around 1 million, correct me if I'm wrong, that have not migrated to the Postbank, that are still using these other services or these other banks. Do you have a campaign in mind or a targeted campaign to get them to switch to the Postbank? Because as I understood it at the time, your offering was far, far cheaper than anyone else's, and you were offering services far cheaper than anyone else. So people, I would imagine if people are not banking with a Postbank based on that, then they're losing money themselves. Somebody is still exploiting them and taking advantage of that. So what campaign do you have in mind for that? Then just onto the post itself. Your outstanding rentals of premises, I noticed I had a question answered yesterday on the Ennerdale post office, which was sort of settled in February, and I'm very thankful for that. Do you have, you alluded to it slightly, Mr. Barnes, in your presentation, do you have actual numbers on post offices that are still shut, or do you wait to be notified of that? Then in terms of your vehicles, the procurement of your vehicles, are you still leasing your vehicles through commercial companies? Have you done a costing, and it's probably old business, but have you done a costing on what it would do to buy your own fleet rather than lease it? Then in terms of mail delivered in percentages, I always find, or mail delivered in standards, I always find percentages a little bit innocuous, because 13%, you know, it's nothing. But if it's 130 million mail items, then it's a problem. Do you have an idea of those volumes that you can let me have? What's the problem with the Northern Cape and deliveries in the Northern Cape? Because I would imagine that the more remote areas, they probably depend on the post office far more than we do in urban areas, because they don't have a choice. So if you can just give us an idea of what's going on there and what solutions you're going to put in place for that. Then in terms of tracking numbers, you know, as those items arise from overseas, they have a certain tracking number, and then they come into our system, and you've got to reallocate a tracking number. You mentioned that at previous meetings that it was to do with the software and the scanning software that you had. Are you going to change that, and by when are you going to change that? Because that would obviously ease your value chain quite considerably. The 342 million rand Postbank settlement, that was the unpleasant media reporting, as I understand it, and a bit of a conflict between you as a CEO and Treasury and government. Given that you've paid it back, and as I understand it, your defense at the time was that, in fact, this money was due to the post office from the Postbank, given that you've given it back to the post office, does that then say that you were wrong in what you did in the beginning? And can you explain that? If we're talking about the same thing, if you're not, just let me know. And so if I can just raise a couple of post offices, the Boksburg post office, unmaintained, vagrants sleeping in the post box, urinating in the post box area, not in a post box, in the post box area. Same for the I have a joke, but I won't tell it. Same for the Mondial post office. And do you have any plans or capital expenditure plans on what you're going to do to secure your premises and maintain the ones that need to be maintained? And then lastly, I did promise this gentleman I would raise it. You know, again, Mr. Barnes, I know the post office is doing better because the volume of complaints I get personally as a Member of Parliament has dropped from at least three a day to one every 2 weeks. I did promise Mr. Liebenberg that I would raise his issue. I did send it on to your head of mail. And he made a very valid point. He said, you're asking, and it's probably old history, but let me raise it. You're asking me to renew my license on time as government, my vehicle license. The renewal notice I get, because I'm not technology-enabled, comes via the post. It arrives 3 months late. I now go to the post office. They penalize me. They charge me a penalty, etc., for the renewal of my license. That's a problem for this gentleman. This morning there was a message I got from the Eldoris Park post office. That's on the East Rand, I think, Kenton Park, that they have no license paper. And please, can I raise it before the committee? So clearly the people in the branch are saying to the customers, go and talk to your MP and raise it at the committee because we haven't got any vehicle license paper. So I did promise my constituents that I'd do that, and I have done. But again, I think your report is very positive, and I congratulate you for that. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Mr. McKenzie. Madam Kelly.
Thank you for the presentation, and I would like to echo the sentiments of Honourable McKenzie, and I never thought I would hear those positive comments from his lips. So we're really making significant progress. Chairperson, I just wanted to ask upon the presentation, if I could have clarity. On slide 4, we see that over 1 million migrated to other banks. What is the current trend? Are some of those who migrated to banks, is there any indication that some of them are trying to come back to the post office? Could we perhaps just get the general trend? Is it an incline is it not significant? Secondly, the issue of the 150,000 beneficiaries that have not presented themselves. Okay, it's a little bit of a concern because that could point to fraud in the system. It could be that, you know, there's lack of communication between home affairs system and social development, etc. Is the post office reporting to social development regularly about this matter? And what is the solution? How can we fix it? Because, it appears that, combating fraud, obviously, and theft, you know, that's why you're saying your expenses are so high when you transport cash. That is still one of the major problems that we're facing. So please, if we could have an indication. Then, on slide 11, it's good to see your strategic focus, how you want to improve the sort of the touch and the feel of post offices, you know, how people experience that. But then also, if we, one of the means to possibly eradicate cash payments over time. Could you not perhaps consolidate within a local area where post offices are relatively closely situated to each other? What about a little transporter or something that if people are arriving at one post office, Chair, that they would be transported to the bigger post office close by? Something to that extent, because I do believe that is really still presenting quite a significant risk, if I may also have the attention of the the member of the board responsible for risk and audit. So perhaps sort of creative ways to move that out, and I agree that it's important that we eradicate cash payments over time as soon as possible. Chair, then, the only slide that really is depressing is the one referring to the dip, slide 12, and its impact on outbound and inbound mail. Now, my concern is, and we know it was a tough time because you didn't have confirmation from government, et cetera, et cetera. Do you ever share the impact of these go slows and these workshop stoppages, strikes, et cetera? Do you share the impact with labor? Labor leaders with workers, etc. Because this is the critical tipping point. If you want to rebuild the reputation of SAPRO, this is really denting it. If you look at the number of days, you know, it's really bad to read that they were sort of deteriorated to 20 days outbound mail, and the same happened with inbound. In July, it took 30 days, and it left you with a terrible backlog. So do you ever share that so that they can see? I still believe, Chair, it's one of the major challenges of government is to have a relationship with labor, that they understand the financial implications of a tools down, because maybe they would then reconsider. In the end, they don't only lose money in their own pockets if it's not a sort of a you know, regulated strike, but also their security of a work opportunity is affected. And then the last one is about staff expenses. Could we see on slide 15? Could we perhaps have an indication? Are those staff expenses directly related to performance bonuses? What are they? Was it overtime? Was it sort of, what were those? Because I understand that the staff over a time actually were very modest in their expectations, and I think for that we should salute them. But, you know, what were those? If you could perhaps explain that. Because what is evident here is that you settled your outstanding property rentals, etc., which is good, but have you made adequate provision for that in your operational expenditure over the next year and actually 3-year period, that you won't run into this again? Thank you, Chair.
Madam.
Thanks, Chair. I'm covered by Honorable Killian, about 150 beneficiaries. Since SAPRO, you are doing well. So far, you are doing well, guys. Congratulations for that. Can you please tell us about, do you have any program for other departments now? Because we see now there's a light in the tunnel. It means other departments are, no, like they see the SAPRO is alive. They can do business with SAPRO. Thank you.
Madam Machine. Thank you, Chairperson. I'd like to know, now that you've got SASA business secured and you've got your universal service obligations funded, do you actually need any other business? You know, can you operate profitably with just that government business? Because I see in the budget this year, there's the thought of public-private partnerships is an afterthought, that it would seem to me that government or the shareholder has not bought into your grand vision, Mr. Barnes, of turning the post office into a logistics powerhouse through public-private partnerships. So am I correct in assuming that government hasn't bought into your business and your plans to change the business model of SAPRO has not met with their approval. Thank you.
Okay.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Along the same lines of Honourable Shin, at one stage, Mr. Barnes, you were losing between 80 and 100, 120 million rand a month. Clearly with this capital coming in, and what a lovely sum. I share your joy at seeing that number. Are you profitable now? You've got your universal service obligation. We assume this is going to be a regular, scientifically calculated item in the budget. So with that in mind, are we going to have no more multi-billion rand bailouts from the taxpayer? Have we got a business here now that's looking good, that can run with the UCO subsidy into the future? And I think that's my question. That would provide a great deal of relief to us and to our taxpayers. Thank you.
Machine? There was something else I wanted to ask. In January, Mr. Barnes, you were very vocal about the value of prescribed assets, and you felt that this was a good idea. Are you then, should you continue at the post office, would be quite keen for those depositors in Postbank to bail out SAA and Eskom and all those other good things? I mean, would you really risk those hard-earned savings?
Have I covered everyone? Should I give the media people also an opportunity to ask one or two questions? No, okay. I'm joking, I was just trying to take a chance. No. Thank you very much to all members for the questions as well as the comments and compliments that have been conveyed to SAPO. I just have one or two questions. I think a comment that I'd like to make, the matter that the COO raises of robbery under the guise of disability is something that we should condemn, because all of us will always stand and protect the rights of people with disabilities. Even as they come to our station, we always encourage that they be given preference. But now, if thugs take advantage of disability, it is a concerning matter. The next thing, they're going to come with a coffin. And then we see those miracles that happened the other day. Very bad. The last week, during the meeting, was it last week? When Mr. McKenzie raised the question. And I know that I left the meeting because I had to do something to do outside. Was that question, was it dealt with there? Was it before? Yeah. Okay, it's fine. But was your matter responded to? He always does that. Oh, that's good. That's good to hear. The profile of the 150, do we know the profile of these 150,000 people, whether it is constituted out of elderly people or young? Indeed, I can't agree. I mean, there is a possibility some of them may have passed on, because I don't know the percentage of the departures from Mother Earth of what I call. But just the profile of those people. With regards to your thoughts about the cashless solutions, are there available avenues that you think our recipients of grants could possibly be enlisted on if the current system, because even the current system is not actually the best system. As we move into the fourth industrial revolution, indeed, more innovation, more measures could be in place. Do we have anything that we're thinking about? And also congratulating you with the appointment of the general managers, and hopefully, because members will be going to their constituencies, it would help to have the details of those people so that they don't call Mr. Barnes as I normally would do. You know, I call him on a Sunday and say, Mr. Barnes, there's a problem here. People's monies have been taken out in Durban, and these people are here, and they are old. I can vouch that they were not in Durban yesterday, and he deals with the matter even when he's on leave, and I think we can't, if we were to have more of you, and the CEO clone you, and have you almost in every government sector, we actually can have a working system, and it is not by it's not by any accident that you are commended by everyone, including everyone indeed. So, yeah, I think if your foot soldiers, your general managers, could rise to the occasion and be your photocopies, the way you run in matters, when you get a query, you are not saying, okay, I'll come back to you 7 days. You immediately deal with the matter. Something that must be combated, something that we must, I mean, at this time and age when we are all digitally connected, it shouldn't be an issue of tomorrow. We should be in a position to do it now. Let's hope that you can inspire them to do it better. But like I said, I wish that members should have access to them so that when they do their constituencies and they are confronted with real issues, they shouldn't be calling you and Mr. Lance. You can take the questions.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to ask the CIO to answer the ones directly under her ambit, and I'll answer the others. But it warrants saying thank you for saying thank you. I must tell you that the spirit, you know, we last week or the week before after the budget, whenever I'm in a region, I go to the regions. I spent 2 days at Cape Mail and Stellenbosch, where we've got a big problem with the post office and so on. And one of the big challenges that we arrived to find was, did we give people hope? Was there a prospect of success? Never mind success. And I mean, I'm overwhelmed by your compliments, because that's what keeps us going. And we have got people on the ground. There are two guys that look after the post boxes at Stellenbosch in a corridor, and the others pack parcels on the floor of a mall, which is at the Martelant post office. But they know that we know that, and we know that the head of the Stellenbosch post office is in her 8th month of pregnancy, and she's in hospital, and I know that she's there. And so we have become quite personal with each other. And that's the culture that is creating this groundswell, and a hell of a lot of work by this young lady over here. But we're grateful. We almost get emotional about how grateful we are for the support that we have. Thank you. Now we'll get to the questions.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate that. I agree. In terms of the 1 million target, it's still a huge number. We'd rather have them in our account, and I think we need to continuously embark on intensified awareness campaigns, hence the work that the comms team and the marketing team are doing. To really get them to migrate back to us. As much as this was an agreed, adopted as a hybrid model, we also were thinking that over time, beneficiaries will start seeing our value proposition, because we still believe we offer a far better, superior product, plus also affordable product for the beneficiaries, obviously except the ATM payment, because that is regulated through the Reserve Bank. So we're continuously doing that. Thank you, sir. In relation to the vehicles, at the moment, because we've set up an investment committee where we have to explore, even whether you're getting vehicles or photocopying machines, the MFDs, we have to actually look at options to buy or to lease. So when we go out on tender, we also ask for both options, and then we look at the option that best serve our purpose. But I can confirm that the forklift we are buying, because we'll always need that. And then in terms of the vehicles, because we're also, from a logistics strategy point of view, we're also exploring owner-driver scheme as part of staff optimization. So we will be exploring that. At the moment, the vehicles are leased, but the forklift we are buying. The problem in the Northern Cape, when we embarked on a huge drive for recruitment, we just could not get takers. So we are actually cross-utilizing Upington as our base, and that is putting some pressure on us. But we've also given HR challenge to really expedite and prioritize that particular area, because we really have to ensure that we promote access regardless of where people are at. It's part of the SAPO Act in terms of point of presence and be visible and be accessible. So we will continue to do that. But we are also exploring RPAs, you know, if we can increase that, because it also speaks to issues of local economic development, so that they can assist us for delivery and conveyancing of mail. So that's what the team is dealing with in that regard. And then on the, you're correct, Honorable Mackenzie, in relation to the inefficiencies of the past where we did the track and domestic track and trace plus the IPS. It just doesn't make sense, because our solution must have a customer at the center of what we do, because the customer needs to track from source to your doorstep. So in the engagement that we've had with the UPU, we've agreed that we're going to integrate our IPS. So we're going to have the international and domestic integrated. So there's no longer going to be domestic track and trace, because you end up having multiple barcodes, which then also create a double processing and inefficiency. So that we've killed that, and we're going to be using one IPS. On the Boksburg and Monjo post office, one of the worst things that we did in the past, we abandoned own buildings and went to lease, you know, we signed agreements and we left our building. They were dilapidated and. But we've really gone back to say, how do you begin to really optimize and sweat our assets and invest and strengthen our balance sheet? I want to confirm with the box, we also appointed Brawl, who helped us to do a condition assessment of the entire property portfolio. And based on that condition assessment, we've gone out on a tender. We've already have a panel of professionals as well as a panel of contractors, and the refurbishment work is underway. We prioritize a heritage building because they're iconic. There's no building as beautiful as a post office in the center of Durban, West Street, in Cape Town, in Tshwane. So we're going to be prioritizing this because they are huge and they were already built to enable SASSA grant payment. I mean, maybe because I'm biased from KZN. You know, the one opposite City Hall, it already has a separated grant payment office with bulletproof, and everything is there. It's just that when people are paying, if it's raining, you see the rain coming through, and that's how bad it has become. So that the refurbishment drive, but all the, even in Krugersdorp, I spent my last month I was there, the team have moved back to our own office because we have to spend our money and strengthen our balance sheet and sweat our assets. So that we'll continue to do, Honorable Mackenzie. So it's part of the refurbishment program. So in our maybe next quarter, we'll be giving you a dashboard, because we also have a clear program schedule around, because there are those that are OSHA compliance where we've been receiving even prohibition notices. So we had to deal with this just to get us compliant, but others is to respond comprehensively on the scope of work that was done in terms of the condition assessment that was done by Brawl. And then in terms of the renewal notices, remember, and again, I think it speaks to the issues of IGR. How do you bring intergovernmental relations to light? The issue of SAPO, and most people don't know that SAPO, as much as we do MVL renewals, but the system and everything is still DOT. And we've been trying to get the back-end integration, even the paper, everything is theirs. So when you get there and it's not there, or the ink and the system is down, it's not integrated with us, and we and each and every region, it's relationship management. So what I've been trying to do is to get the DG and our minister speaking to the minister so that it becomes a service because we already now have infrastructure, computers that are working, we're going to be connected, the uptime is going to be there. It's in our interest to make sure that we're servicing customers in a manner that is efficient. So we are dealing with that. But other areas based on relationship, we are able to get that on time, and it's about proactively dealing with inventory management around their paper, but the system being integrated with us. In relation to the impact, ma'am, yes, we did. And I think for the first time when we were doing the salary negotiations, we were fortunate enough to support the HR team during the negotiation. So myself and the CEO as well as our chair, we were part of the negotiating team. But to our surprise, you know, when we're sharing our figures, sharing the delivery standards, I don't think they've taken time to really interact with this report, so that you're saying, you know what you're asking vis-a-vis what is the current reality. And when people are not doing this, these are the implications and everything. And I think that's why our strike, if you compare that to 2014, it was hardly a month and a half. And we were able to find each other because everyone understood the sense of urgency. Because even the issue of us being given an opportunity to dispense grants, and that is an essential service. So we were saying we can't then be saying we care, and at the same time we undermine the very same thing that will give us a lease of life. So I think we are almost finding each other. It's just that this information needs to be embedded across the board, including our own staff, because there's issues around, you know, it's easy to get a senior executive to sign performance contracts. But I'm actually saying if we want to rebuild and inculcate a culture of performance, even someone who sweeps the floor needs to understand why I must keep this place clean, even why the phone must not ring more than three times. You know, you get to those basic. It sounds pedantic, but at the same time, people need to understand that we need to really win the confidence of our customers, because if you drive from the airport, you can see other logistics companies mushrooming everywhere. So you are no longer indispensable. So we need to really do our bit, and I think people are beginning to appreciate this. In terms, I think the alternative source of revenue, the PPPs, off-balance sheet transaction, all CEO will speak to that. The profile, remember, it comes from the SOC pen. Information that we get, because we work together in terms of the technical focus area groups, we are able to then say these are the targets, this is the universal number in terms of the population, but whatever that is the 150,000 that is remaining, it's correct that it could have been ghost beneficiary. I don't have the tangible proof at the moment, or even the duplicates. So that cleaning of the data, and also the SOCPEN system is a very old system. That is why the BOT, the IGPS, was going to actually improve. So I think we need to continue working together in cleaning up the data, and that data warehousing will enable us to do analytics, and that is the work that we're doing with the team. But probably you could find that there were other people may have been deceased, but also ghost beneficiaries. And now that, because it's like a combined assurance, because we are able to say, but if it's one person dealing with everything, we are able to then say, but this system does not talk to this, or this beneficiary, the ID number and what I see, you know, that's where you then can clean it up. So it's working better for the government to actually have both of us working on the same data warehousing chairperson. The cashless solution, definitely. We will be launching a Sapo Pay, a cashless solution. And again, it's not if you think of Kenya, Eastern Africa, they launch M-Pesa. And that's just mobile money, and it's working regardless. And these are people in the deep rural areas paying each other through M-Pesa system. So we wanted to deal with the encryption as well as SAPO around the mobile money. So we are exploring that. For us, the policy architecture, we were saying if SAPO were to explore other opportunities, ma'am, in terms of the business, we believe we can disperse NESPA. We believe we can also help in the Home Affairs in terms on the renewal, because the original application has to be managed by Home Affairs themselves. But when it's renewed, just like the banks are already doing that service, we are also speaking to that. Fortunately, our former minister is now on the other side, and we've been able to talk. But we are working around that. So we really believe that with technology, with state-of-the-art as part of the fourth industrial revolution, we believe that we could really play an exchange a role to really become that infrastructure to enable efficiencies for government services. Thanks, Chair.
Chair, if I can cover some of the ground that wasn't. I mean, let me put this question of the intercompany accounts to bed once and for all. I mean, it was perhaps in, it wasn't a repayment, it's just a reversal of an intercompany account within the same organization. Okay. And so, and it was never anything more than that. And that's the end of that matter. I think percentages are misleading because a percentage of a very big number is still a lot of unhappy people. And I think we aspire to be beyond the UPU standard. And the way we're solving it is what's happening in Korea, for example. So we worked out in Korea that we provide a perfect service to DocX, which is our own company. We are their best courier, and they have choice. And we started analyzing why that was true. And the reason it was true is because we have a one-to-one relationship with them. And so we have a predictable requirement and a predictable service. So we've started linking up with clients on speed services with specific predictable courier-based delivery. And so instead of trying to solve something for the entire retail population, we're starting to build one by one little dedicated partnerships with clients, which will give us the impetus to provide a courier service that is competitive. So that will change things. The key to all of this stuff is systems. I must tell you that we still manually sort most of our posts. You've got to walk around. You'll find someone sitting there in a booth sorting physical letters manually in 2019. I mean, that's what they do. And they read the postal codes and sort them manually. And so all of our efficiency beyond where we go now, it's not possible with further energy. It has to be with systems. And we're now starting to have the capital to spend on those systems, and we are spending it. I talked to you about motor vehicle licenses. We've got a board meeting on Friday. We'll be submitting to the board an app solution for MVLs that has been developed by somebody else where you can literally order your motor vehicle license on your phone. But let's not talk about that yet because it hasn't happened. But let me use that by way of introduction to PPPs, the answer on PPPs. We're going to have no choice but to do PPPs. The world outside there in commerce is developing solutions way, way faster than we would even dream of starting developing them. And they are being almost thrust upon us. We eventually are not going to be able to say no. We're going to have to get through all of the PFMA or other tender and all those. We don't break the rules. We never break the rules. But and to that end, I just want to mention, and if you can, you'll find it on the post office website. I see they put it on there. I gave a talk about corruption and ethical behavior to all of our staff on a broadcast if you want to go and have a look at it. So we'd never break the rules, but we are going to have to partner with private sector developed initiatives. We're going to have to partner with them because I spend maybe 4 meetings a week, the first thing in the morning or last thing in the day in Johannesburg, interfacing with potential partnerships and solutions. And we're going to end up doing them because we're going to have no choice but to do them to be competitive. So it's going to happen. It's not going to be our choice. It's going to be the only choice for us to remain competitive and to build a state asset. And to that end, we really see, I mean, take something like the Integrated Grant Payment System, the IGPS. That is a hugely scalable system. We talked about NSFAS. We talked about it is capable of paying any identity-linked payment whatsoever. And if you start talking about an integration with Home Affairs and so on, you start talking about a government payment system housed in a government infrastructure. And those would be some of our dreams. And all of that sort of starts enabling a technology-centered center of exchange, which we will then call the post office, which will be able to fund its own growth. Talking about specifics and branches, I got a note when I arrived here about Woodstock branch. Just to say we do deal with things. We paid them $146,000 yesterday, and the only outstanding money on Woodstock branch is March's payment, which will be paid when it's due. I mention that to say that we have very real-time communication at executive level now. So I can find that answer within seconds. If you ask me which post office hasn't done this or which SASSA fraud is happening live on a Saturday afternoon at 4 p.m., the CEO, myself, and the CFO know those things real time. And that enables us to decentralize the management to deal with them. So we'll solve all those branch queries and things as they arrive. You asked about staff expenses. Those are just operating staff expenses. It wasn't like a backlog or a bonus or anything like that. Bonus is not a word we include in the vocabulary, and I don't think it's covered in the Act, actually. So, but let me say this. We talk about sustainable profitability and the need for capital going forward. If there wasn't a reorganization going on, we would have submitted tomorrow our strategic plan, which is, we think, a document that the board is completely satisfied with, we're proud of, and it addresses our future ongoing financial sustainability. I think it'll be delivered some days later, but it's printed, it's ready. Okay. That shows and I don't want to preempt a public document, but it shows a return to operational profitability. It is, for this year and for probably the next 12 to 18 months, confused by the upfront expenditure of branch rehab and SASSA overtime and purchasing of equipment to service real deals. So we do have a series now of hockey sticks where we've got a dip in initial expenditure and a long, much longer tail. So if we were to extract those economics, we are still, as a post office, losing like $80 to $100 million a month because we haven't done any of the staff optimization. But if you start adding them back, we tend towards becoming operationally profitable. My view is, and you know, I don't want to say this too loudly, but my view is we still believe that that if we were to raise capital in the same way that Eskom never used tax money to build Eskom, it raised its own capital by issuing bonds. We believe the post office can do that as well. It's not something I can say glibly because it requires a lot of work, but it is far more efficient than borrowing money against government guarantees. And it's far more inclusive in the economic sharing of those funds. And we still anticipate that we would be able to raise those bonds, and I'm talking about way less than $1 billion, you know, in the years going forward, off our own balance sheet and off our own projected income statements. But if so be it, with the government guarantee, it's still far more efficient for the state. So to answer your question, Honourable Mackenzie, we're not coming back for bailouts anymore. You know, we're just not. But what we might have is upfront expenditure for long-term gain. And so that, for the next 18 months or so, might still show us in an operating loss-making position. But if we decompose that, we can explain it. The cashless solution, the CEO mentioned SAPO Pay, but this is always a commodity now. You can get cash solutions. And even credit cards, I mean, this tapping thing with cards is dangerous, and we think we've already taken it to the Reserve Bank. Someone can literally take a point of sale thing, which is about this big now, come walk past you and tap your wallet and get some money off you. Okay, and so we've raised that with the Reserve Bank, and I must say we're getting an extraordinary support from people like FASA and BASA and BankServe, and all of the people are really helping us. So we think the solution, and I'll come back to the question of other government departments, relies on reverse integration, taking the furthest point of contact, the most intimate point of contact between a citizen and a service, be that a spaza shop, be that a local clinic, be whatever it is, and reverse integrating that into a central government repository of data and technology. And we are, at this stage, the footprint that will join those dots. And so that's big picture what we see happening. And the, if I might call it, the success of SASSA has perked the interests of many government departments who we are engaged with on the possibilities of them reversing some of their functions into us. We've mentioned Home Affairs, we've mentioned NSFAS, there are others which also come into play. So I think, Chair, I've covered it. Thank you.
Chair.
Thanks, Chairperson. I just also wanted to cover in terms of the intergovernmental relations. As the post office, obviously, we will mirror how the government is arranged technically from an infrastructure perspective, from an IT perspective. So if government is to have an e-government system where all these databases are merged, it's very easy for us to do a value add now from an e-commerce perspective, from a distribution perspective, etc. So we encourage governments talking to each other and trying to find points of integration because it's easy for us to add value on that front. And hence we talk to CETA around e-government, etc. Other departments are approaching us. You know, this mood around the turnaround of the post office, a lot of other people are now coming to us. Not too long ago, CIFA approached us. They wanted to roll out their SMME funding through our post offices. It's a great initiative, and we are working on it. We will be concluding MOUs very quickly, and we'll be making sure that those queues are lining up with those SMMEs into our post offices. Department of Labor, in terms of their labor centers, they are keen to work with us. So as much as we are approaching others, others are coming to us to seek these value-adding partnerships. Just want to add something on profitability. Obviously, you know, a large chunk of the 120 million is labor costs, and we do have our rationalization plans whereby we want to drive owner-managed initiatives. The COO spoke about the forklifts. It was an opportunity for us to rationalize, I think, just under 100 employees out of our system. But we realize the critical assets, we'll hold on to it, we'll buy it ourselves. But there are initiatives that we are putting in place to make sure that we can rationalize and get back to profitability. Thanks, Chair.
Let me check the time. 1 minute or half a minute each. Mr. McKenzie, Madam Sheen.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just a small thing, CFO, you're sartorially elegant in your SAPO colors of red, white, and blue. Very pleased to see that. Ms. Koehler, can you tell me when will the standardized tracking number systems be implemented? So by what is your target date for that? And then the opening of the Gauteng legislature this year took place in the Alberton Civic Center, and I think it's because they didn't want to see that Rissik Street post office in the background. So when you're attending to heritage buildings, please attend to that one. It is the most magnificent building. Thank you, Chairperson.
Madam Chair.
Thank you. Please can I have an answer to my question about the prescribed assets?
You're on the floor.
So, Chair, on the prescribed, I got into a bit of trouble from my board members, and they wanted me to make it clear that those are my personal opinions and not those of the CEO of the post office. First, but let me say this. No, we will never take depositors' money to fund other organizations. You can quote you on that. But we do think that when you're considering sources of capital, it's a comparative debate, not an absolute debate. And so if you look at the nature of that source of capital, my arguments, which were in my personal capacity, were that there is a place for it in the mix, that's all. And so, but no, we're not looking to take... We have got a big pot of money there. We've got big plans for it as well. Thank you, Chair.
Madam.
Thank you, Chair. We were looking at the first quarter of the new financial year because there's so much work that has been done in that regard. So the end of the first quarter in the new financial year. As I've indicated, that the restoration program and the refurbishment program is underway, but with the priority being our heritage building that are giving us that distinctiveness as the post office. So definitely we are prioritizing that, Honorable Martin.
Ms. McKenzie? No, but you've made the point. Thank you very much, sir. Madam Banks, you can go back to Stellenbosch this afternoon to go and check all those operations. But on a serious note, we are proud that you are bringing back SAPO to its former glory. And I just hope that the board, you know, boards have tendencies to destabilize
sometimes. I trust your board, and we hope that you will embrace this team and make sure that we have more. You must actually produce for the country, because I think the attitude that we find in your leadership, in your team, it's something that needs to be emulated elsewhere. We can make this country work with the kind of team that we're having. And that's why we're hoping that any of your regional GMs will actually perform at their level, so that we are actually able to change the face of this country for the better and for the best of our world, because we're talking about a very small space now. This world has shrunk so much that you can be anywhere now. All of the best, and we are parting with you, and we'll remain with members to deal with our minutes. Thank you. Re a leboga mme Maluleke to join us to help us with our deficit in terms of membership. We are going to zoom into 4th. And apologies that we couldn't give you refreshments, but there is something that came late there. You can pick something and drink a coffee or tea or whatever you. To everyone, we are saying. The 4th of December, the minutes, the first page, Madam Killian, okay. The second page, yes, ma'am.
At the bottom, the second last bullet, last sentence. It should read, thereafter the bill can be reworked and reintroduced in the 6th Parliament. It doesn't, you know, the wording, there's something just a little odd. Thank you. That's my recommendation.
I think it's appropriate. Any other page, number 3? Any mover? Any seconder? Seconder. Thank you. The 12th of February, first page, second page, Madam Kim, per third page, you are on, and Mr. McKenzie, per second or third. Madam.
I just wanted to correct Honourable Mackenzie's surname spelling. It is under paragraph 3, second line under that heading, adoption of the legacy report.
Mackenzie.
And it just must be corrected to S to become a Z. And then there is also at the bottom on under the heading questions and discussions, second bullet, the committee wanted to know if the wireless open access network would be withdrawn in its entirety. It's just the removal of the repetition. Thank you.
Mr. McKenzie, sir.
Thank you, Chair. I've been very nicely covered by Honourable Killian, and thank you, because that was my point. But if we're going to be really accurate as a committee in Gaelic, which is where my name comes from, there is actually no Z. It's pronounced E. So it's McKinney, actually. But when they were typesetting, you know, when they first got the types, and they couldn't find an E, so they used a Z. That's why it's a Z. So it's McKinney, it's Mingy, it's those names. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Thanks, Mr. McKinney. Page number 4, Madam Killian.
Jefferson, I would like to suggest the last bullet should read as follows. That's the second sentence. The minister, I would suggest that we read it as follows. The minister responded that the role of ICASA will have to change to respond to the challenges brought about by the Fourth Industrial Revolution. I don't think the minister, I can't recall, because I don't think the minister addressed the issue of the independence of ICASA. So, with respect, but if we really want to then go to that, Chair, there's only one way, and that is to go to the audio of the the meeting. That's why I thought it's important for us to make reference to the role of ICASA. Because remember, ICASA as an entire entity is not a Chapter 9 institution. There is an element of ICASA's function in terms of broadcasting, which is protected in terms of the Constitution, but not the entire role of ICASA.
Well,
and therefore...
I'm trying to... And then, yeah, continue.
So, remember the whole issue of the new role of ICASA and the new, can I say, operations of ICASA, as was elucidated in the white paper and etc. I think it would be better to refer to what the minister said as to the role of ICASA will have to change to respond to the challenges. Instead of referring to it, the minister responded that in terms of the independence of ICASA, there needs to change as ICASA. It doesn't make sense, you know, etc. So that would be my recommendation. The role of ICASA. Yeah. Not
okay.
Independence. Because part of ICASA's role is to provide protection in terms of broadcasting.
Minister.
That is not abused by any government. But it's not the entire ICASA that is a constitutionally protected body in terms of Chapter 9. That's not accurate. Thank you, Chair.
Madam Shen?
Chairperson, these are the minutes of the meeting. And I specifically asked the Minister whether there would be protection for the independence of ICASA. In terms of the ICASA Act, it is a Chapter 9 institution. And the AFSMOL report also declared that it was a Chapter 9 institution. It just needed to have some wording rechanged. So ICASA is regarded as being an independent. It's just the ANC that doesn't think it is.
No, Madam Shin. Madam Killian is correct.
I asked a question in the committee meeting. These are minutes of a meeting.
Yes.
I asked about the independence, and the minister said the independence of ICASA would be looked after.
What does that mean, looked after? I don't think, well, no. We can go to the audio if it was there, but I agree with Madam Kill that the role, she referred to our mandate. The recent mandate that we have been given is to drive the fourth industrial revolution. And therefore, it can't be the independence. It can't be. It's the role. In other words, it has to be refocused to also embrace the new responsibility assigned, but not the independence. The independence is a Chapter 9 issue. Nobody can tamper with that. And therefore, I would have probed it, and I can vouch it is not true. But if you want us to go to the...
Please do, Chair, because I specifically asked the question, because that is, I know that is a controversial issue. She said that not only would it be the independence, but they would look at broadening the role in terms of the fourth industrial. That was also, but it wasn't in place of.
Okay, so you grant me to listen to the audio, and if you are wrong, I sign the minutes. You want the transcript? Anyway, you can deal with that. So, how do you want us to conclude the minutes? You packed it. Sorry? I'm not going to attend the 2 more minutes. I want to cancel this meeting. They are not taking us anywhere. Anyway. our role must come to an end and our independence. That was on a lighter note. No. We'll do the transcript, but I agree with Madam Killian's view on the matter. But if we're like Mr. Barnes, Mr. Barnes would have played the transcript now live,
because he's on top of his issues, so he must go for quick crash classes. Madam Killian?
Chairperson, how long will the transcript take us? The reason is just that some of the committees are dealing with very crucial legislation, etc. I'm concerned about one thing, and this is that I believe that we cannot lose anything by saying that the minister said the role of ICASA will have to change. so, to support the fourth industrial revolution, I don't know what the issue is. If Honourable Shin believes that the minister could be quoted and could be bound by minutes, I think she's not correct. So we could either get an indication, but I would suggest that we actually adopt the minutes, and that we, once we have received the necessary printout of the wording of whatever the minister said, we could reconvene and we could then change the minutes. Because where we're sitting, we are going through the minutes. Why don't we deal with the matter and get it out of the way?
In actual fact, let's leave it, Madam Julia. I agree with you, and these are our minutes. I'm saying, and I want to restate it, I would have challenged the minister on the question of independence. Look, it's not what she says, it's what the law says. So whether you can come as a president and say the independence shall fall, it can't occur until the law is changed. So to quote and I think it's immaterial for all I care. But I wanted to accommodate Madam Sheen, but that's why I asked the question. Why don't you allow me to check the transcript circulated to you, and if you are right, we'll then bring it back. But why bring it back if there's nothing to bring back? That's why I want you to grant the chair the right to sign the minutes, and approve them in principle, so that we don't stagnate for unnecessary technical issues. Madam Sheen, you're back online.
Chairperson, it's not a technical issue. It's about the accuracy of the minutes of a meeting and what a person said at that meeting. It's got nothing to do with the law. It's got nothing to do with whether this is a technical issue.
What?
And if we do agree to let you sign the minutes, and then I dispute the what you've done, are you really going to call us back for another meeting? No chance. Absolutely no chance will you do that. Not at this stage of the Parliament.
Are you talking about me? But you are now imputing on the... Come in, Madam Killian.
Chairperson, really, we're wasting very valuable time. This is what I've all along argued, and Ajira knows my position. I have said, stay clear of quoting, because then I can say, but why did you not quote me? Because I have said X, Y, and Z. Now we are quoting the minister. She could very well say that she didn't say that, or it's quoted out of context. Consequently, I want to ask you that you put this matter to the vote. As per my recommendation, that we move to a vote to adopt it to be reworded. Thank you, Chair.
Madam Shin?
Chairperson,
okay.
if
Madam Dongling.
I agree with Honourable Killian.
You wouldn't disagree.
Now what, we don't know whether it's working. I don't know what goes on.
No, you never do.
Madam Shin.
Yeah. Chairperson, if Ms. Killian is worried about quoting the minister, then perhaps you should just take out the entire sentence of what the minister said, if she's afraid of misquoting the minister. I'm quite happy for the thing to go to get a transcript, and we park the minutes until we get the transcript and then decide. But I'm not going to agree to something that, on the off chance that we will come back and discuss it.
So we remove the last bullet. It is gone.
Yeah.
Shall I get the mover? Second it. Thank you. Page 19. 19, page 1.
page 1, page 2, page 3, initiator and any mover, moved and supported. 26 February, page 1, page 2, page number 3, Madam Killian, Mr. McKenzie. McKinney.
Honourable Chair, and we actually have a new member now.
Mr. Bikini. Mr. Please.
Can I please just go to first bullet under questions and discussions? The committee noted that although it does not conduct oversight over ICASA, the functioning of the regulator impacts on, and I would suggest, the portfolio's oversight responsibilities, the portfolio committee's oversight responsibilities. So it's just because I don't know the business operations, the portfolio committee's oversight responsibilities. That would be my recommendation as far as that is concerned. And if you will allow me, I would like to move to 2-3 lines below that. The committee was of the view that Section 6 of the ICASA Act was sufficient just one thing. There where it is saying, just going back to where Mr. Rabin Matlaloha has been sentenced to 20 years in prison for fraud and money laundering. I would suggest that we insert there, the committee noted that Mr. Motlaloha appealed the sentence but not the finding of guilty on fraud. That we stipulate that he, you know, we acknowledge that he's going to appeal, but he is not, he's only the sentencing, not the conviction. So if we could include that, and that we then say, we proceed to say the committee was of the view that Section 6 of the ICASA Act was sufficient to, and then we, instead of what is said there, conclude that the chairperson should vacate office. Was sufficient to conclude that the chairperson should vacate office. And then we start with a new sentence, the next line, we make it a capital. Instead of the fact that ICASA was not acting to have the chairperson recalled from the post was possibly contrary to the law. And the reason why I include possibly, Chair, is because it's this whole issue of it's not ICASA that must act, it's actually the minister that must. Yeah, or the committee. But as I say, just those corrections. And then the only other thing is just in that same bullet, ICASA assured the committee that it will not fund, instead of carry, fund any legal costs, and noted that an urgent meeting will be called with the minister and council to discuss the matter in detail. ICASA should not report back to the committee. ICASA will report back to Parliament. I think that is what we need to say. So, because otherwise, it's our committee, and we agree that primarily it's the other committee's responsibility. So that those would be my recommendations. Just the second bullet, Chair. Last sentence, ICASA responded that the list of factors as dealt with by the Competition Committee was not exhaustive and subject to change. And then at the very last bullet, at the very last line, where it starts, ICASA resorts to external legal advice if they are unable to deal with complex legal issues. So those are my recommendations for adjustment.
Is going back then to the first bullet point in the last sentence. I would suggest that we say ICASA should report to the Communications Committee on what action it will take on the matter.
Page
Chair. Chair, Mr. McKay was an MP. He was very young, good-looking and tall, so I don't mind the confusion. He's now Secretary General of Liberal International. Chair, first line. The committee expressed concern with Vodacom's application. I don't think it was the application, it was the application of a 49 Rand charge to roll over data. So that was the first one. And then under resolutions, I think we asked, it wasn't so much the demographics of Thailand, certainly the question I asked was, in terms of international benchmarking for SADC countries, can you tell us how many operators operate in those particular markets? They gave us some general ideas, but they said they would come back with a full list of that. Yes, you asked. Oh, you asked about Thailand. I asked then about the number of network operators in the SADC countries that they benchmark. Thank you, Chief.
Okay, thanks, Chair. On last bullet, no? There are other issues highlighted, including timelines in respect of spectrum license. Can we delete the necessity of the wireless open access network? Can we delete on that line? The last bullet.
The last bullet, yeah. Other issues highlighted
included timelines in respect of spectrum licensing.
The necessity
should be
of
full stop.
Okay.
And then we delete the necessity of the wireless open access network.
Why? Okay, just she hasn't finished. She hasn't finished. Yeah. Then it, why should we delete it?
I thought we have said already in other page.
In the same thing.
Yes. If I'm wrong,
Madam Sheng and Madam Killian.
Chairperson, the question was whether it was necessary to have a wireless open access network license, as the licensing regime already catered for such a thing.
So it was.
The bill talked about creating a new category of license, which was the wireless open access license. And many of the people who presented to us said it wasn't necessary to introduce a new category of license, because the current licensing regime did cater for such a network.
Yes, ma'am.
Then we should make reference to the license.
Yeah.
So then we should say the need for the need for a wire open access network license, because as it reads now, it doesn't make sense.
Good. Are we fine?
Yeah.
Okay. Shall I get a mover? Thank you, Shaker. Supported. What's left? Do you need the meeting of next week? SA Connect. Yes, ma'am.
Danger of being unpopular. I would say yes, because SA Connect is one of the flagship projects that has faltered. And I think that we need to actually have an update so we can pass on to our successor committee the state of play. I mean, the fourth industrial revolution one, I think we can forget, which is the following week. But I think that it would be useful to actually find out what is actually happening with SA Connect as we wrap up this term or this parliament.
You said that one, we can forget about it?
The fourth industrial revolution.
Who come?
The last.
Okay, it's fine. I will consider that, whether it should pass, because the whole idea was that as we are chair, we should actually be appraised about
are we? It's their mandate now that indeed we had, we, at the time when we came up with the program, we were not informed by what the minister said last week, but it was really the question that it is a mandate that belongs here, and it would have been good for us to be appraised as well, given the stagnation. But it's fine, we'll look at it, we'll see whether we will proceed with it or not. But thank you very much for the meeting, Mr. Chen. And apologies for the late breakfast. You can have it as a brunch. Mr. McKay. McKinney. Mr. McKinney. Thank you.